Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Monday, September the 27th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, the mission for the Democratic Party here in the United States and the Labour Party's conference is going on right now in Brighton in England. I'll be talking more about the first than about the second, but I will be talking about both. Coming up next.
Mr. Schumer.
I vote no.
No.
On this vote, the yeas are 48, the nays are 50, 3/5 of the senators duly chosen and sworn not having voted in the affirmative, the motion is not agreed to.
I enter a motion to reconsider the failed cloture vote.
The motion's entered.
Now, Mr. President, I want to make sure everyone understands exactly what has happened here on the Senate floor. The Republican Party has now become the party of default, the party that says America doesn't pay its debts. Our country is staring down the barrel of two totally Republican manufactured disasters, a government shutdown and a first ever default on the national debt. The impacts of both would gravely harm every single American in this country. Republicans would let the country default for the first time in history. A few moments ago, the Senate had an opportunity to begin solving these problems right away. Democrats did their part and voted yes. But Senate Republicans, meanwhile, voted to drive our country straight towards a government shutdown and the first default in our country's history. Let me be clear. What the Republicans in the Senate did tonight is not normal. This isn't your typical Washington fracas. And it shouldn't be treated as such. It has far more severe consequences than the typical political catfight. Republicans know the consequences of their obstruction. They know a default would likely create a recession. They know that middle-class families will suffer immensely. They've heard the same warnings that we have. And by many calculations, the Republican default will raise the deficit by more than the American Rescue Plan. And yet, Republicans still obstruct it tonight. It's one of the most reckless, one of the most irresponsible votes I have seen taken place in the Senate. And it should send a signal to every family, small business, market watcher about who in this chamber is in favor of endangering the economic stability of our country and who isn't. Let me repeat, the Republican Party has solidified itself as the party of default, and it will be the American people who pay the price. Social Security checks, Medicare benefits, veterans benefits, small business, all this and more are now on the chopping block because Senate Republicans are playing games with the full faith and credit of the United States. Now, despite Republican intransigence, this matter cannot be set aside for even a moment. Before the vote, I changed my vote from yes to no in order to reserve the option of additional action on the House-passed legislation. Keeping the government open and preventing a default is vital to our country's future, and we'll be taking further action to prevent this from happening this week.
And that was Senator Chuck Schumer earlier today, and I hope that you are well, dear listener, on this Monday, September the 27th, 2021. This is just absolutely insane, and it's exactly what you expect from Republicans, because this is what they do. And it's insane, but it's not surprising. These people are disgusting. And what I am speaking about is the vote in the Senate today, in the United States Senate, to essentially default the government and default the country and shut down the government. I mean, this is what these Republicans are doing with this vote. You have to get 6-0 votes to continue debate. That's what this vote was today. It was a vote on whether or not debate should be continued to advance this bill that was being worked on, that had been passed by the House, that would fund the government through December the 3rd. The House passed that bill last week. And now this week, the United States Senate won't even get a bill like that to vote on. Why? Because the Republicans blocked it. There weren't 10 of them with any kind of principle at all. There weren't 10 of them who cared about the country, even one iota, beyond themselves, to say, you know what? I think it's a good idea to have a country where we actually have people going to work, getting salaries if they're government workers. I think that's a good idea. I think we should have a country that's buttressed by economic fortification. I think we should have a government that's actually functioning. I think we should have a government that is able to pay out unemployment checks to those who cannot get work through no fault of their own, through this pandemic continuing to handcuff people. I think we should have a government that effectively provides aid to families. I think we should have a government that cares enough to provide Social Security checks and ones that are even more robust. Because, of course, Social Security now is an absolute joke. When you retire, Social Security now isn't what it was in the 1980s, let alone what it was in the 70s and 1960s. Once Reagan got his grubby little hands on things and everything else from there just went downhill, Social Security now is an absolute joke. And even now these Republicans want to get rid of that. They wanted to get rid of it with George W. They wanted to get rid of it now. Oh, you know, we're going to just shut down the government. Your Social Security checks aren't coming to you. Bah humbug. And this is what they do all the time. They did this 3 times when Trump was in the White House. 3 times. Yeah, I mentioned his sorry ass name. 3 times. And you heard that speech from Senator Schumer, the majority leader, loud and clear. And what we should all be doing right now, you and me, is that whenever we have a chance to speak to somebody who is not sure about, ooh, who should I vote for in the midterms or anything like that, you need to repeat some of the things you just heard from Chuck Schumer, the majority leader of the United States Senate. You need to repeat the fact that this is an unprecedented measure by the Republicans, that the Republicans want to get rid of Social Security, that they voted against it, that they voted against funding the government, voted against unemployment checks, voted against pandemic relief, voted against having funding for a government to run. They voted against paying off debt. But they want you to pay your student loan. And quite frankly, so does President Biden. But these Republicans want you to pay all that. But these, I almost said a word that I shouldn't say, wanted to, they voted to default the government, to default the country rather. Oh no, we're not going to pay our debts, but you, college student, should pay your $185,000 debt or your $58,000 debt or your $100,000 debt or your $87,000 debt. You, college student, should pay that off. But we're going to let the country drown. And we're not going to let the country pay its debts. These Republicans do not want government. And this is what we should be hammering home right now. Right now. Don't wait till next year when the midterm season begins. You need to do this now. I've been saying this all calendar year long. That we have to behave now as if the election season has begun for 2022. Because it has for the Republicans. They have drawn a line in the sand, dear listener. They have drawn a line in the sand. And they've made it very clear with this vote earlier tonight, earlier today, because it's night, oh, I guess it was night evening on the night of the on the East Coast when they did this. But they made it very, very clear. We don't want to fund the stinking government. We just want it to be a nation crumbling. We want the country to die. And I think votes like this are as bad, arguably, as what happened on January 6th. These are acts of terror. As far as I'm concerned, dear listener, this vote tonight by the Republicans was an act of terrorism against the country. But you see, Democrats aren't sophisticated enough to freaking well label it like that. And you should. Mr. Harrison, Jamie Harrison, if you're listening, DNC, if you're listening, please call it that. I want you all to message better. Call this an act of terrorism tonight. Call it that. Call what the Republicans did tonight on the Senate floor an act of terrorism, an extension of January 6th. They want to kill the country. Now, if someone in the Democratic Party would say that and say it over and over and over again, maybe we'd have news outlets pay attention. Because, you know, the Democrats, so milquetoast. You know, can't trumpet your own accomplishments, can't sound the bugle and the horn on your own accomplishments. President Obama suffered from this. Oh, I really, really shouldn't trumpet what I'm doing, trumpet. Ugh. I really shouldn't sound the bells and ring the bell for an hour for what I'm... No, I shouldn't. You should. Let the people know, because people are too busy to realize what's going on. I know some don't care, but some people are too busy to realize. So the Democratic Party now has to get aggressive with the messaging and literally say that this vote tonight in the Senate was an act of terrorism by the Republican Party. That will get people's attention, even the corporate news media, who only seem to cover the... Not only seem to, that is the truth. They just cover the Republicans. Because the Republicans are guaranteed to say the most outrageous thing, and that's going to get clicks and retweets and ratings. But the Democrats don't even think to say anything that's outrageous, but also true. It is an act of terrorism. You want to kill off the country? Oh, we're going to let the country just drown in dirt. We're not going to pay any of it off. And then the first thing these guys complain about when a Democratic president is in there, oh, the debt, ooh. But when the Republican's in there, oh, yeah, no, nothing to see here. Oh, nothing to see here. It's disgusting. And we have to start messaging now. We have to get aggressive about it. And we have to do this now in phone banking. When you are phone banking, and if you're someone who's phone banking, I would start this right now. Whatever race it is, whether it's local, whether it's state, whether it's national, no matter what, you need to get on the phone. When you're calling, cold calling people in a state, in a district, you need to be telling them about this vote that happened this evening in the Senate. Say that it's an act of terrorism. Say what the Republicans have done. Say that they've stopped debate. This is the third time in the last year that the Republicans have done this. Voted not to even have a debate. They voted not to even continue debate on the For the People Act. They voted not to even continue debate on a couple of other things. These people do not care about you. And the Republican Party is a clearinghouse for the corporate and the uber rich. That's what they're the clearinghouse for. I don't think anybody in the country doesn't realize that now. Everybody knows it. And we have to start getting aggressive. We can't just know it. It's not enough to know that Republicans are murderers and are traitors. That's not enough to know that. You have to articulate that into a message in a bumper sticker. And you have to put that all over the place. Sucker. Be all over it. Seriously, we have to do this now. It's nearly October. We have to get ready for this now. The Republicans are all over this country wreaking terror. And that is not a joke. They challenged election results. They challenged them again and again and again. We had an Arizona audit, a confirmation yet again that the results in November of 2020 were as advertised. There was no fraud. There was none. And we all knew this. And yet another report comes out, further confirming it again. Another report came out in the New York Times last week or so about the Republicans lying their asses off. They knew that it was no fraud. Giuliani and Sidney Powell and all these people who are disgusting and who shouldn't even be in the country should piss off to some island somewhere and get lost and stay lost. Speaking of lost, Columbus Day is coming up soon. But these people should get the hell lost and never come back. And there was a New York Times report, I believe it was. It was New York Times. In-depth report last week that said that they knew, Giuliani and co, knew that this was all lies, but they kept going into court and lying anyway. They should have their bar licenses stripped, both of them. I'm not saying their memberships from legal organizations. I'm saying their bar license should be revoked. Like Danny Glover revoked that diplomatic immunity in Lethal Weapon 2, right? When the racist South African white guy, diplomatic immunity, yeah, right. And Danny Glover showed him what diplomatic immunity was. Has just been revoked. You go watch that movie. 1989, that movie came out. Just a year before Nelson Mandela would be released from prison after serving 27 years behind bars. Now, these Republicans, this is a continuation of January 6th, folks, and the failure to connect the dots is at our own peril. No pun intended, connected to the book by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa, which is a riveting read. I've been thumbing through it, and my goodness me, it's so far so good. But this is the thing, I keep saying this. I've said it over and over again, dear listener, and you know this because you're a loyal listener, and I thank you for your loyalty. I've said from early this year, in fact, even last year, that you have to write down three things that are near and dear to your heart, issue-wise, policy-wise, and write a sentence or two about each of those things and discuss your positions with other people who are similarly minded and have a coalition with them and form a group with them and then together discuss your ideas and then your positions on things and then look at what is going on in your city, in your state, and where the people who are being elected in your city, your district, your state stand on the issues that you care about. And if they stand the same as you, then you thank them, let them know you're there, and you thank them. If they stand opposite from you on the issues you care about, you need to get in their face. And I don't mean get physically rough with them, because I don't advocate violence. I'm simply saying you need to build your organization, and you need to let them know you are here. It's like in football, on the pitch, you got to let an attacking player know that you're here. You tackle them, not the politician, but on the sports field, on the football field, right? And I'm not talking NFL. I'm talking about the Premier League football in England. You need to let that attacking player know from the off that you are here. Boom. Welcome to the Premier League. Sliding tackle into the ankles. No, again, I'm not advocating violence. I'm just telling. And with politicians, you have to let them know you're here. And what I mean by that in the political context, because again, I'm not advocating violence, I don't advocate it. I'm saying you need to let them know who you are, you need to call them, you need to meet with them, you need to tweet them, you need to send videos to them, you need to do everything you can do to let those politicians and their aides know that you are here and you want to talk about these issues and you have a very important concern with them. That if they don't change their position on these things, we're going to run someone against you. I don't care which party they're in. We're going to try and primary you. We're going to try to get you out. We're going to vote you out. We're going to run someone against you who represents what we believe in. And our organization is growing by the day. And we are going to be getting donations. We're going to be doing everything so that you don't sit here again and legislate against our issues, our values. And that's what it has to be. And as Senator Elizabeth Warren said, by the way, we have to start being values-oriented, and we have to talk about politics in a values-oriented way. And I totally agree with her. We have to do that. Otherwise, it's just the same old, same old. We've got to get creative, and we've got to do it now. And we've got to be urgent about this. It's nearly October. Before you look around, it's going to be July of 2022. And then you're looking around. I mean, my goodness me. This time is going to go by so quick. Nobody thought that it would be almost October already. I mean, granted, the calendar knew. But we didn't. I mean, it seemed like just yesterday that terrorist attack happened on January 6th. And now look at us. We have got to get wise. And we've got to get there now. And we've got to start repeating in our phone banking elements of what you just heard from Senator Schumer about the Republicans, what they've done with this vote, that they've obstructed and stopped government three different times under the previous guy in the White House, and that they're doing it again with this vote. These people want to bring what's left of this country to its knees. They are taking axes, they are taking bulldozers, they are taking cannons to the Statue of Liberty. They are taking cannons to the White House, to the state houses, to the Capitol building. These people are continuing January 6th. And if you don't think they're going to try again to do that, you're out of your mind. We have to really start getting going here. And I'm going to talk in just a few moments about the DNC, something that happened today that I think you should be aware of. That's coming up next. Welcome back. And dear listener, I hope that your Monday has been good. I should say that the vote in the Senate, on the Senate floor, regarding having continued debate and a move forward on the bill to keep the government in the United States open through December 3rd was voted on earlier in the day. It was not in the evening, so I was incorrect there, and I apologize. My mistake. And the vote was 48 yes and 50 no. 48 yes and 50 no. In order for the debate to continue, you would have had to have 60 votes in the yes column to allow for debate. The cloture motion, which is the motion to close debate, was defeated. The motion to open, to continue debate was defeated, So you heard it there in the first block at the beginning, near the beginning. So, you know, the whole thing is that we've got to, let me just say this and button this up before getting into the DNC a bit. We have to be creative. We have to, as I said, borrow from Senator Schumer and use a script from what he has said in that speech. Just find a few quick buzzwords about what he said in that speech. And when you are pitching your Democratic candidate to voters that you're cold calling, make sure you put in a few of those buzzwords. Tell them that the Republican Party is voting and has voted in September. They voted in September 2020 to close down the government. They voted to let the country default. They voted to do all these things. They've shut down the government three different times in the previous administration in the space of just over a year. You have to get the voters some really crystal clear facts and keep hitting those facts. And you've got to get creative. I mean, look at all the people on TikTok and on Twitter and elsewhere who do these videos, very creative things, very entertaining, very creative. Sometimes they're 30 seconds long, a minute long. You remember Sarah Cooper? Sarah Cooper now has gone on to have a really great career. She's getting into a place as a person who is a comedian and someone who is a writer and who's an actor, I guess, as well now, I think. And she's got her own show on Netflix. She has her own special. A lot of it started from just her doing these videos. And she was a comedian before this. The videos on Twitter, she was doing these impressions and impersonations of the guy that was in the White House for the previous 4 years. And that just got retweet after retweet. It just really blew up. And then she ended up parlaying that into bigger and better things. And a lot of the time, that's what's happening now. Same thing with Issa Rae. Her career didn't begin on HBO. Her career began with YouTube videos. And then it got parlayed. Enough people saw it. And then executives from HBO and other places, I guess, went and saw it on YouTube. And boom. Now she's an award-winning actor, producer, writer. I mean, Issa Rae began on YouTube. So there's hope for us all, including yours truly. But no, I mean, seriously now, I don't mean to be too facetious there, but I mean, this is what happens. People are creative and look what it's parlayed into. And I get it. It doesn't happen for every single person. But even if it doesn't happen for you, you can be seen if you want to be seen. I know there was an article written by Chris Hayes the other day in, I believe, New York Magazine or New Yorker Magazine. I forget which one of the two. Where he talked about, you know, now that, you know, what if everyone is a celebrity, which really we are at that stage now. And I am not a fan of the cult of celebrity. I don't, like I say to you, I do not despise celebrities. I have no problem with celebrities. I like celebrities. I got no issue with people who happen to be in the spotlight as celebrities. Of course, I don't like it when people just spout a lot of nonsense or they're famous for being famous, not for anything that they've done on screen or on stage, or but just because they said something stupid last week, they're now famous and they've now got 57 million followers. You know, that's where fame has taken us. But what I'm against is the cult of celebrity, the toxicity of celebrity, and how much our country has fealty to celebrities. That is the culture I do not like. But what I'm saying is that when it comes to politics, we've got to get imaginative. We've got to do these things. We've got to catch the eye. You know, you've got to be imaginative. Catch the eyes of these politicians. Build coalitions around the issues, around values. And do a colorful video. Do a 15-second spot, a minute spot. And catch the eyes of these politicians that you want to challenge or you want to say thank you to, depending on where they stand on the issues. This is what we have to do. It's indispensable. We've got to do this. Because this day and age now, everything moves so quickly. It's so quick. I mean, to the point in which some video that got, say, 50,000 retweets at the beginning of the day is practically forgotten by sundown. I mean, seriously. People's memory banks are so short. And we have to take the time to give eye-catching messages, eye-popping messages, and abbreviated slogans. I know it's a soundbite era that we're catering to, and I lament it. I really don't like it. But this is how this particular country and much of the world runs, on soundbites. And people, quite frankly, are not going to stick around for an hour-long podcast. They're not going to stick around for that. They're going to stick around for a 10-second message. I don't have time. I don't have time. Oh, I don't have time. Come on, what is it? What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? I mean, that's the attitude of us as a culture. What do you want? What do you want? Fast-paced. Give it to me straight. 10 seconds, please. Boom, boom, boom. Thank you. I'm done. I'm gone. And that is really the animal, Frankenstein or monster, whatever, that we've created. And technology has, quite frankly. So we've got to get creative and we've got to be dynamic. We've got to be eye-catching. Our sloganing and our sloganeering has to be better. And our messaging has to be better and sharper. So that's just a reiteration of what I said in parts of what is in the last block. Now the DNC, now let me just get to that. The DNC had a Q&A, I guess. It happened earlier today. And let me just see here. Jamie Harrison, who is the DNC chair, had been speaking at this DNC meeting, and he introduced the First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden. It's so good to have a doctor as First Lady, and it's so good to be able to call someone an actual First Lady, as opposed to what we had the last 4 years before, previous 4 years. Not a First Lady at all. And it's so good to have an actual first lady again in this country. And Dr. Jill Biden, as far as I know, still teaches. She continues to teach while being first lady. And, you know, I think she's a decent person. You know, I think she's a good person. And she spoke for a few minutes about the importance. In fact, she spoke about very much what I spoke about and what I've been speaking about for a long time on this podcast. I wonder if she listens. I'm not that big-headed to think that she does. Someone might, though. An aide to her. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, come on. I'm sure she came up with what she said by herself. I know she's no fool. Mama didn't raise no fool with Dr. Jill Biden. And Dr. Jill, First Lady Dr. Jill Biden, said that we've got to get active. We've got to get out there now. We've got to start spreading the And thank you, Dr. First Lady. This is what I've been saying for the balance of this whole entire year. That we have to, in this calendar, whole calendar year I've been talking about, the election for 2022 begins now. I said this back in June. I said it in May. I said it in April. We have to start behaving right now like the election is going on, because essentially it is. And so Dr. Jill Biden, First Lady, was talking about this today and saying that we have to get active right now. We have to call people. We have to donate. We have to get involved. We have to call and phone back. We have to volunteer. She was saying all of this today. And this is what I've been saying, and especially to those of you who listen to this podcast on a daily basis, that we have to get active. It's not woke is not the thing. And I can't tell you how much I detest that word. I know some people go, oh, right, he detests it. We're going to just keep saying it to him because he detests it. Which is the mentality of some of us, you know. We'll just keep voting for the toxicity because those people over there are going to be really pissed. And that's a waste of a vote. That's what they do in England. Oh, we just don't. It's not that we love Boris Johnson. We just don't want these people to be happy. So we're just going to vote for him if we're in Ruislip or Uxbridge. Ruislip or Uxbridge, where he is. Or we're going to just vote for these Tories just to spite these people. And that's your vote? A negative vote? You're voting to spite somebody? Not voting because these people are going to do anything for you? So there you go. Yeah, people are free to throw their vote away too, I suppose. But the point I'm making here is that Dr. Jill Biden, back to the US of A, Dr. Jill Biden, First Lady Dr. Jill Biden, said, you know, we have to get active. We have to get out here. We have to work really hard. We've got to spare no quarter. And I love that the First Lady of the United States is not just speaking my language alone, but she has a real commitment to this, a real passion. And I look forward to seeing more of this. And I'm glad the DNC did do this event today. And I want to see more of it. And I want to see a lot more of it. And the First Lady took some questions and answered a few of them. And it was good to see that she emphasized being active, activism, engagement with people, calling people, having conversations with people, donating, volunteering. Because, as she said, it's going to be tough. She even admitted it, that it's going to be a tough election next year and that we are in a must-win situation. It is like the playoffs, only much, much worse than that. Because we've got baseball playoffs coming in the postseason in baseball. And I am a huge baseball fan. I'm a huge sports fan to begin with. Not that that matters to anyone listening. It doesn't. It's just purely me. And I know it's selfish. And maybe sports has no place when I'm talking about elections. But I'm just trying to draw an analogy now. However tricky that might be, dear listener. But I am trying. And it is like a must-win situation. These games for the San Francisco Giants, they're must-win games now. If they win, let me not go down that road. But we are, in a must-win situation as a Democratic Party. If you are a Democratic voter listening to this, then I am here to tell you that you and I are in a must-win situation. The Democratic Party is. And we have got to start working now. Now. We really do. And please heed what I'm saying. If you didn't get to hear the First Lady today as I did, please know that she was very urgent about this and she was very passionate about this and she was very insistent about this. Please know that. I am conveying that to you, dear listener, for your good, for my good, for our good. And very frankly, for the country's good. We have to continue to get involved, get active. And the same way that we would whisper to each other about that new iPhone, ooh, do you know this feature? It's got three cameras. Ooh. Right? The same way that many of us do that with each other without thinking. We need to be doing that about voting. We need to be doing that about the issues. We need to be doing that about the candidates. We need to be doing that now about the 2022 midterms. And spare no quarter. And let's get active and let's start strategizing now. And that's basically what, in a nutshell, Dr. Jill Biden, the First Lady of the United States, said today. This is really important and we've got to get it done. So I wanted to share that with you. And the DNC chair, Jamie Harrison, was on the call, as I said, and he emphasized that, look, people have asked him, a lot of people have asked him, including yours truly, has asked him, what is the DNC doing? What are they doing to deal with what's going on? Because the DNC, they've got their hands full, and the Democratic Party only has an 8-seat majority in the House, as far as I know, something like that. 7 or 8 or 9-seat majority is very slim. And in the Senate, it's the vice president who breaks the tie and can't get anything done in the Senate because we've seen what's happened. And I'm saying to you, dear listener, that we are now in a position where we have to win these midterms. And again, I know that Dr. Jill Biden didn't say this today, but the issue here, the big issue here, is that these moderate Democrats pilfered away our big-ass majority that we had. We had something like a 30-seat majority or so, maybe 34, 33, 29, whatever it was, seat majority before the November 2020 election. And then we pissed it away. We frittered it away. I should say the moderate Democrats did. And then, you have people like James Clyburn, who is a moderate. I really respect him, but he's a moderate. I'm not going to hold him that he's a moderate against him. I'm just saying, I respect him. I'm simply saying that he made boogeymen and women boogie people out of the progressive movement. And I'm sorry, don't blame our movement. And by the way, there's different kinds of progressives too. We're not all in the same boat. We're not all in the same white boat either. And we're not, and even there's some white people that aren't in that white boat either who are progressives, because there's things about the progressives, white progressives, that they don't like either. So I certainly don't, as a black person, like some of the things that some of the white progressives do. And again, they exclude black folk and brown folk from speaking up in the movements, from taking over the movement, from rather being leaders in the movement. And that is my big problem with the progress. And they dictate the white progressives, some of them, and they dictate the agenda all the time. And take us for granted and try to speak for us. We're not having that. You need a movement that's not only inclusive, you need a movement that's all-encompassing and all-welcoming. That's the kind of movement you need. All of these. You can't be doing this and then you're the one being boss. We've had enough of that, man. It's like what Spike Lee said in Do the Right Thing. Slavery days are over. They're over. My name ain't Kunta Kinte. This ain't Roots, baby. This is a day that, we're up here and we're here. We're not here to be underneath you. We are here not only as equals, we're here as leaders. So that's the issue. And so my whole thing is that we have to really get going. And Jamie Harrison has got to develop a strategy. And he said he is, but he's not going to share. He said he's not sharing a lot, obviously, because there are people following him online and probably, signed into this meeting that I got signed into, that I went to, virtual, of course, that he's not going to give away all his trade secrets. Like he said, hey, the coach isn't going to give their strategy away ahead of the football match for the Super Bowl. They're not going to give that away. So why should he? And I totally agree with that. And as I said, I think the DNC are doing things behind the scenes. I don't like the fact that the messaging's been poor and that I'm getting emails every 2 minutes for donations. I don't like that too much. And I quite frankly think that people like President Obama and former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton didn't give two rats about the DNC. Not when they were in office or when they were running for it. I mean, You know, I mean, that may have changed with both of them. Certainly with Obama, it's changed to a degree. But Hillary Clinton, as Donna Brazile so famously wrote in her book Hacks, H-A-C-K-S, said that Hillary Clinton didn't give two rats about it. I'm paraphrasing. Didn't really care about the DNC. When Donna Brazile was the, at this time, she used to head the DNC, and then she got brought back as the temporary interim head of the DNC. This is around 2016 or so, 2015, 2016, and thereabout. And when the election came and Hillary Clinton lost, in quotes, lost with an asterisk next to the end of the word lost, right? And Donna Brazile asked her, hey, Hillary, you know, we could use some help here at the DNC because, you know, there's a lot of money we've spent and we really need some help. Can you bring some donors in? Can you do some events? Can you get raise money for us and do fundraisers so that you can give, you know, some of that back because we're in some trouble? And she just was very indifferent about it. You got to read the book Hacks, H-A-C-K-S. And there was such a firestorm about that book. And the thing is, the book was true. That's why people were so some people were so upset. And basically calling Donna Brazile, not basically, they were calling her everything but a child of God. And there was a word beginning with N in there as well. And there's a word beginning with B in there as well. I mean, that's just disgusting. And these are people from the Clinton camp and other places. So the point is that Jamie Harrison has his work cut out for him. He can't do it all by himself. I've had some critical notes of Mr. Harrison because I feel that we've got to get much more aggressive than the DNC is doing publicly. Now, like I say, I bet you behind the scenes they are being very aggressive. I guess he doesn't want to disclose what he's doing. I kind of do get nervous that the person who's heading the DNC is the person who got his butt kicked in the Senate election in 2020. He got his butt kicked. I mean, it was not even close with Lindsey Graham. Absolutely dominated him. It was embarrassing. But anyway, the point is that Jamie Harrison made it clear we've got to get out there and really do this because this majority is slender. And these, let me get back to the moderate Democrats. They have frittered this away. That's who I blame for this. And I really wish, quite frankly, this event that I attended today had been done 6 months ago. You know, it would have been April or so, May or so, whatever it would have been. You know, April, May, March. You know, I wish that the event had been done in March of this year instead of now, because now we're coming toward the holiday season. We're in the fall. People have started to hunker down a bit, which is probably the reason, another reason why the First Lady did the event today. But I think that people now perhaps, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't characterize it the way I was going to. But I think if you'd done this earlier in the year, you could get people thinking, then do another event every few months, every couple of months. And then as we get within a year of the midterms, as we're soon going to do, start doing these events every couple of weeks. And then when we get 6 months out, do these things every week. And then when we get 3 months out, do these things 2-3 times a week. I mean, this is how we have to do this, you know. We have to get super. I'll be doing this on YouTube, on the Politocrat Daily Podcast YouTube channel. Please subscribe, won't you? Thank you. I will start to do this. You will start to see videos from moi, yours truly, in the next little while. I'm going to start doing this because we need to do, and please, you do the same. Some of you have far bigger platforms than yours truly does. If you're listening to this and you have a platform and your platform is at least 1 million followers or, you know, 300,000 followers, please get your platform out there and spread the word about the things we've got to do. Please. This is so important. And we've got the numbers. We've got the passion. We're going to have to. The passion brings the numbers, as I keep saying. You don't need numbers, as James Baldwin said. You need passion. And we've got to make this happen because these moderates ran on some really poor messaging last year. And see, no one wants to talk about that. James Clyburn, oh, it's the progressives. Oh, because I kind of strayed away from what I was going to say about that. Oh, it's the progressives. And, you know, defund the police was the reason we lost. That's bullcrap. That's not the reason that the Democratic Party lost. The reason the Democratic Party lost so many House seats last year is because they didn't have a clear, coherent message. And they tried to be all things to all people, like Democrats love to be able to do. They love that. And it's usually these moderates who want to not do anything. They don't want to come out and say what they're really for. They don't want to say what they're really against. And they want to stay right in the middle. Not too hot, not too cold. It's like Goldilocks and the three bears with the porridge. You know? Ooh, it's not too hot. Ooh, it's not too... Oh, dear. Was it Goldilocks? I don't remember. You remember that? The story about the porridge that's not too hot, not too cold. Oh, dear. And that's what these moderate Democrats have been. And as a result, when you do that, you don't get votes. People see right through you. And they see that you're just desperately trying to hang on to power. And you're not offering anything to the people because you're so concerned about not wanting to rock the boat. You're in the center. You're a centrist. And you're not moving. You're centered. Like a sentry standing outside Buckingham Palace. You're not moving. You're not blinking. You got no pulse. You got no heartbeat. And that's why voters rejected your behinds. Because you didn't have the passion. You didn't bring it. And so the voters took one look at you. And they said... Get out of it. And they didn't vote for the Republican. I keep thinking of Nicole Malliotakis, who ran against Max Rose in Staten Island, I believe it was, in New York. And I keep talking about, I talked about this a few months back. She had a debate on New York One, which was shown on C-SPAN. And she was on a debate with Max Rose, and she out-debated him. And you know what she wore? Color. I'm not talking about what she wore. I'm talking about the color she wore, right? To optics. Now listen. I don't think I'm being sexist when I say this, because I'm about to explain why. She wore a bright red, scarlet red jacket. And what did Max Rose wear? A black jacket with a white shirt. I don't think he had a tie on. He had a white undershirt, bland as ass. And she was pow. Because she wore this bright scarlet red jacket. Pop, pow. That you can see there, boom. That's a color that is powerful. And lots of other things. And things go along with that too. But that's not what my point is. My point is that she stood out against this bland, blank slate. And even though I didn't agree with her ideas, I thought she presented herself better in her debate, because she told you exactly who she was, exactly what she was about, and what her mission statement was. And Max Rose stood there stumbling, umbling, and fumbling, and couldn't define himself out of a paper bag. And that's why he lost. And I'm telling you, presentation is everything. Not only, I'm not saying that he lost on the basis of the debate, he lost voters who watched that debate. And I'm telling you, that's why you've got Nicole Malliotakis. I believe that's her last name. I may be mispronouncing it. I apologize, Congresswoman. Congresswoman, see? That's why you've got Nicole Malliotakis in Congress right now, the Republican, and not Max Rose. And that's why you've only got a 7 or 8 seat majority now. And it's because these moderates absolutely pissed up the game. They absolutely did. Excuse my language, but they did. And as a result, now you're scrambling for life. And you have the First Lady on there going, well, you know, we really are in the fight to the finish here, and this is a must. But why did we have to not, this is not to the First Lady of the United States. I'm saying rhetorically, but why did we find ourselves in that position in the first place? And I don't buy the Beltway nonsense. Well, they split the ticket. They voted for president and they voted for the other party in this. I don't buy that. Well, they vote for the Democratic president and they... Listen, maybe that does happen in some states, but come on now. This isn't about one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me garbage. This is about who you want running the whole governmental structure of the society you're living in. The country you're living in. Oh, well, we're going to... Who does that? Some privileged person does that, right? Some rich person. Oh, well, I'm going to vote Democratic for president. And then in the Senate, I'm going to have a Republican. Yay! No, who does that? Only someone privileged does that. Because the rest of us can't afford to do that. That's too cute by half. We cannot afford dear listener, to be playing around like that, like this is Monopoly or some chessboard. We have to start strategizing properly. And you don't apportion things like this unless you're rich and privileged and you know that whomever you vote for isn't really going to harm you because you're top of the tree. Come on now. Who does that? And you got these Beltway people. Oh, well, before I stopped watching all this, oh, well, you know, they split the ticket and they had a long tradition of it. Oh, please. Can't be splitting tickets. We got to be making sure that we have a properly democratic party influence, a proper one, not hanging by our fingernails. And I keep talking also about this meeting that all of these Democratic House members had a few weeks after the end of the election last year. It was a triumphant one for the executive branch because Joe Biden got elected and Kamala Harris got elected. But come on, the Senate and the House, the Senate couldn't even be fully Democratic. They couldn't even take those seats. They needed four and they got three of them. They couldn't even get the fourth one. And then in the House, they lost all these seats. Like, what's going on with that? So that's the issue. And no one addressed that really, except for in this pretty volatile meeting that took place. The New York Times did a really good account of it, where you had the progressives, the moderates, and, the progressives and the moderates all in one big room or virtual room. And they were all talking about what happened. And Rashida Tlaib made it clear, look, you know, I'm not going to sacrifice my people or my identity for your corporate and moderate agenda. I'm paraphrasing her, right? I don't think she said corporate agenda. But she did say, look, you know, I'm not going to sacrifice any of this. Our people voted us in to do things, not to retreat. And then you know what happened? What really kind of sunk the spirits around these here parts? Is that in January, when there was an opportunity to shake up the moderate system, only three moderates were the only ones that voted against Speaker Pelosi being Speaker. And all the progressives who dug this line in the sand, they all voted for her. Oh boy, the squad did, all of them. Because that's how power works, and they know. But how come three moderates were brave enough to stand up to Speaker Pelosi and not vote her in for Speaker again? You know that's going to cost them, although maybe there was some kind of agreement beforehand. Speaker Pelosi knows how every vote's going to go. And all these people who are posturing, I mean, they had a meeting with her there in November and they gave her what for. They made it very clear to her. Look, we're not playing here. And now, all of a sudden, everything's hunky-dory. I wonder what's been promised them. I wonder what's been promised the constituents. I wonder who's been paid under the table. I know, Mr. Cynical. But let me tell you something. This is how the game gets played, baby. This is how it gets played. I'm telling you now, this is how the game gets played. I'm telling you. They do all kinds of stuff that you never get to hear about unless you read some books or unless you are in it. And so this is how it works. Yeah, I know. Ain't your cup of tea either, maybe. But that is how the wheels get greased in the Beltway. It's true. It's true. But do not give up. We have lots of work to do. And there's one or two other things I want to get to right after this.
For the audience, I know you've seen it, a statement put out by Senator Tim Scott on the failed negotiations. Here's what he wrote. I offered to introduce a bill that included our areas of compromise, a bill that activists and law enforcement alike could have supported, despite having plenty of agreement. Democrats said no because they could not let go of their push to defund our law enforcement. Congresswoman Bass, your reaction.
First of all, you do remember, Jonathan, that the House of Representatives successfully passed the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act out of the House twice. And in that bill, before Donald Trump proposed it, we proposed accreditation for police officers. This time around, Senator Scott actually did not put a proposal on the table. I believe he's referring to the proposals from the last time. I will tell you that Senator Booker negotiated a deal with the Fraternal Order of Police, and we offered the Trump executive order, which is still in effect, frankly, because the Biden administration has not rescinded it. Both of those proposals were supported by police. You remember the police at the Rose Garden. I said that he negotiated the bill with the Fraternal Order of Police. So essentially he's saying the police wanted to defund the police. I also have to say that when we voted for the rescue plan, no senator voted for the rescue plan earlier this year, which did provide local funding that supported the police. So Senator Scott knows that that is a talking point that is used. And the sad thing about the state of our politics in the country right now is one does not have to tell the truth. One can just make a statement, true or false.
And that's so true. Indeed, that was Representative Karen Bass yesterday with Jonathan Capehart on the Sunday show on MSNBC. I didn't watch it, just a clip there that I play from YouTube that you can actually watch. And look, that was Karen Bass. She's the representative of Southern California. I forgot what districts in Southern California, in LA, certainly around LA. And I play that clip for two reasons. One, to show you again, to give you a chance to listen to the hypocrisy and the lies of the Republican Party. That's one reason why I play that clip. But the more, even more importantly than that, although that, I mean, it's, you know, the, anyway, you know, even more importantly than that is to say that today, Representative Karen Bass put out a tweet announcing that she is running for Los Angeles mayor in 2022. And I am excited about that announcement because I think she should be going on to bigger and better things. Not that being a congresswoman isn't a bigger or better thing. It's a really good thing, actually. And I was one of those who said that either she or Barbara Lee should be your next California senator. Remember when Kamala Harris vacated the Senate this year because, of course, she was running for president, for vice president. She became the vice presidential pick. And when it was clear, obviously, that the election went the way of the Democratic Party with Biden and Harris winning, it was clear that as of January the 20th, although she left just before then, I think she left on the 18th or on the 17th or whenever it was, just a few days before that, it was clear that she was going to have to obviously vacate her Senate seat. And she did that. And so in her place, Governor Newsom, the California governor, had to name a replacement, and there were people in the running. One of them was Alex Padilla, who was at that point the Secretary of State in California. And there were people like Barbara Lee, who I thought was gonna be one of the top candidates. I thought she absolutely was gonna get the job, and then she'd have to vacate her own seat in the House. And same with Karen Bass, who's again a representative in Los Angeles. But he didn't pick either of them. And I thought that that was not good, because now there's no black women in the Senate at all. And the only one that was there, who was there, left that position to be vice president. Who wouldn't, right? But there was no black woman replacing her. And you know what happens when white men leave? Very often there's white men replacing those white men. But when black women or black men leave, particularly when black women leave, you do not see other black women replacing them. I mean, that, you know what I mean? So I play that clip because I am really happy about this news that Karen Bass, Representative Bass, is running for office as Los Angeles mayor. That's a pretty darn big job. I think you'd make the case, wouldn't you, that that job is even bigger in some ways than being a congresswoman in the House of Representatives. I mean, Los Angeles is a huge city, and the metropolis is what, maybe 9 million people? I don't know the exact number, but I do know that that is a really big job, and I know that she will tackle it well. I am so excited about it. So I donated some money to Karen Bass today. As soon as I heard this announcement, boom, I saw it on Twitter. I want you to do the same. Can you please spare whatever you can? If it's a dollar, if it's $5 or something bigger than that, whatever you can spare, please go to KarenBass.com, K-A-R-E-N-B as in Bravo, A-S-S as in Sam, KarenBass.com. And there is a donate button there. And when you go there, you will have an opportunity to donate to Karen Bass. I mean, she's such a wonderful human being. She's a leader. She's charismatic. You know, you heard her speaking just then. She's somebody who projects confidence and strength and integrity and has a good heart. You can see it in her. And she would make an excellent mayor for Los Angeles. Karen Bass to me is someone you can look at and you can really trust her. I'm not going along the level of, oh, I looked into Vladimir Putin's soul. I'm not going to George W. Bush territory. I mean, why should I be going into a war criminal's territory in the first place anyway? I'm simply saying that you just look at Karen Bass and she's got it, you know, it's just, she's got, I mean, you just look at that smile, you look at her, what her background is in terms of what she's done, how she's led, her experience. I mean, she's a really great leader. I know I may have veered into, and I apologize for veering into sexist territory when I said, just look at her smile, because I wouldn't say that about a man. Although I've said that there are men who are good looking and handsome, and I've said that there are men who are dressed a certain way. I have said that. Maybe not often enough on this podcast, but I have said that in life. I've said that on Twitter at the Popcorn R-E-E-L. But the point I'm making is that Karen Bass is definitely, I think, a candidate that you can trust and believe in, and she's got integrity. So go to KarenBass.com and donate there, won't you? Please donate to her campaign from Mayor of Los Angeles for 2022. See, she's doing the right thing. She didn't wait. She said, heck, I'm starting a good 14 months. Or a good, yeah, a good 14 months before. Shoot, I'm not waiting. I'm not making excuses. I'm doing this. So get behind Karen Bass. This is going to be the first of many candidates you're going to hear me talking about between now and the midterms in November of next year, because I'm going to be talking to them, hopefully. I'm going to be trying to line that up. I'm going to be donating to them. You do the same if you can spare some money. That's if you can. It doesn't have to be $1 billion. It can be only $100 million. It doesn't have to be $100. It could only be, say, $5. It could only be $1. Whatever you can spare, please donate it to Karen Bass's campaign for mayor of Los Angeles, or whomever is running in your city or in your state or somewhere else who you know is good and you know they're good on the issues and they voted the right way on pretty much everything. Please go donate to them. Please, and spread the word that you have, and then spread the donate link or spread the word or address. Tell them where they can go to then donate, because, you know, sometimes links can be very tricky and risky, you know what I mean? So anyway, that's what I wanted to say about that. And I want to get now to the Labour Party conference. I want to get to that right now because I realize that I haven't even talked about that yet. And the Labour Party conference in the UK is held at this time of year. Usually, I think the Conservatives usually go first. Well, it depends. It depends. I think they take turns. And then the Conservatives will be, I think, next week. It's kind of like a Democratic National Convention, except, of course, it's not for anybody to be running for Prime Minister. It's just every year they have this conference, as opposed to the Democratic National Convention is every 4 years. So the Labour Party conference takes place. It began last Saturday, just a few days ago, over the weekend. And I didn't even know this until today. So I'm not happy with that I missed 2 days. In fact, really 3 days, because I missed Monday today as well, of this party conference. It goes on through Wednesday, so at least I'll get, and you can get to look at, 2 more days. And it's all, apparently, all streamed online too. I think it's on their website, labour.co.uk, I think, or on their, on their Twitter handle. I got to look at that because that may not be accurate. But the point is that they outline their agenda for the next 12 months. And they do it in a party conference where they've got supporters, where they've got fellow Labour Party supporter members, and Labour Party members, etc., etc. And it's a really good thing. And sometimes it gets very interesting. David Lammy made a speech and he talked openly. I think he made a speech today or he made a, had an interview where he talked openly about the Labour Party's failure to get more black men in the party as leaders or as people, as MPs. There are only three black men in the entire UK who are Labour MPs, members of parliament. That's disgraceful. Chaka Omuna, who used to be in Labour, African black man, defected to the Change Party. And then he defected to the Lib Dem Party. And then he got booted out of his seat. So he's now someone at JP Morgan. Yeah, they all go to the corporate sector after, private sector after, don't they? Not all of them, but many of them do. And so he was a black, well, he still is black, but he was a black Labour MP. And now he's no longer, well, he changed to the Change Party. Then he changed to the Lib Dems. And now he's out of politics altogether. And actually a really good guy, actually. And a bit more of a moderate sort, I think. But anyway. But David Lammy, who's distinctly respected, long-time leader for the constituency of Tottenham in North London, he spoke about this. And the Labour Party needs to diversify and include. And, you know, the question becomes inclusion into what? Representing what? We need to represent. But what are we representing is the issue. And also, you know, we need to be included, but included into what exactly? And how much of that are we getting to control? And those are the kinds of things that I think we need to put full square on the table. But I do agree with David Lammy. There's got to be more black. Well, there's actually quite a lot of black women. And let them be more. Let there be more black, even more black women in the Labour Party. I can think of three or four off the top of my head. I really can. One of them is Diane Abbott, who celebrated a birthday today. There's so many. But there's not very many black men at all. So anyway, there are other issues at the Labour Party conference today. And Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, gave, from all accounts, a remarkable speech. And I need to find out what that speech was. I need to go listen to that because I'm going to be covering a bit more of this Labour Party conference in depth over the next day or two as the conference continues and then concludes. Again, I'm a little ticked off that I did not realize that I only learned about this today. But again, I think the Labour Party's conference is streamed live because I remember watching it last year or the year before. And I do remember it being streamed live. And let me just get the proper website for you. It's labour.org.uk. Labour, that's L-A-B-O-U-R, .org.uk. And I think that you really need to follow UK Labour on Twitter. And they are really good. UK Labour, U-K-L-A-B-O-U-R. So Keir Starmer is the leader of the party. We know Labour have had their issues in some places, but look, Labour actually are doing some really good things. They want to scrap this business rate tax and restructure the tax system and reauthorize so that the rich people are paying their fair share. Unlike Boris Johnson, who has said, oh no, we're bouncing this off the backs of the poor and they're going to have to pay more and poor. I mean, it's just really crazy. Poor and more. It's just absolutely nuts. But that's Boris Johnson and the Tories, just like the Republicans over here, and really disgusting and dastardly. And so the Labour Party conference goes on and continues. Rachel Reeves gave her speech today or yesterday, I forget which. There have been some really riveting speakers thus far, and I need to watch this. I just saw accounts of the speeches, and people really loved what some of the people had to say, especially Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, who spoke today. And then on Wednesday, the closing speech, of course, is going to be none other than from Sir Keir Starmer, who is the Labour Party leader, as I mentioned. And by the way, just think, just over a year ago now, just about a year ago or thereabout, Jeremy Corbyn was the Labour Party leader. That's not true. 2019, excuse me. In 2019, Jeremy Corbyn was the Labour Party leader. And now, he is barely in sight. He is still a member of the Labour Party, but he's no longer a parliamentary member of the Labour Party because he had their whip removed from him last year over the whole thing about the anti-Semitism comments that he made and the things about, oh, well, it wasn't that serious. The report that was out didn't really, it wasn't as serious as that. And it was just very sloppy from Jeremy Corbyn, among other things. But the point is that, look, Jeremy Corbyn is not going to have the same influence in this Labour Party that he had 2 years ago. And the progressive or left-wing faction, if you will, of the Labour Party is still there, but it is not in the heart of Labour leadership. I mean, Angela Rayner may be the closest thing to it, but, you know, she has been given so many job titles now. I don't know which one she prefers. Well, I know she prefers one that has her in the ascendancy and serving people, which she does and does well. But the left wing of the Labour Party is still out a little bit on the circumference of the party. And the left infrastructure that was in the heart of the party 2 years ago is all but gone now. It's all but gone now. And it's a moderate party again. And there's been this tension and this ongoing pull and push and push and pull for decades in Labour, just like there's been that in the Democratic Party here in the US over the last goodness knows how many years and decades, but particularly in the Labour Party lately and even for many years, there's been this push and pull and tension between the moderate wing and the left wing. The moderate wing, the progressive. Moderate wing, you know, there's always been that. And so we'll see how it all unfolds coming up these next couple of days. This is a conference that goes on all day long for all five of these days, and Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I think it's going to be streamed at labour.org.uk. It may be streamed on Twitter at UK, LABOUR, or wherever. But it's got to be on because, I mean, and it's definitely going to be on TV in the United Kingdom. So if you are listening to me right now and you're in England or you're in Scotland or in Wales or Northern Ireland, you are more than likely to be able to be at a television set somewhere where you can actually see and access the Labour Party conference on TV. But definitely online it will be streaming somewhere. It could be on Labour's YouTube channel if they have the event up on there. I've got to catch up and watch all these speeches because I just love this stuff. You know, I do love when politicians articulate their vision and they've got their fans in front of them. However, the vision's got to be something that's positive, not like the garbage that we see here with the Republicans. Oh my gosh, in 2016, their convention was horrible. And of course, this past year, their convention was horrible as well. And you've got the best is yet to come. You know who that was. I'm not going to tell you who that was, but you know who that was, right? Right? I'm not even going to give you a hint. I so desperately want to hint to you who it was by talking about the person. Well, no, I'm not going to. But I'll just leave that there. It's just, oh, dearie me. Anyway, I really want to thank you so much for your indulgence. And by the way, President Biden today had his booster shot. So, FYI, and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell talked about how he had his too. But anyway, just wanted to mention that. If you are of a certain age or if you have an immunodeficiency system or whatever that's called, not syndrome, if you have a immunodeficiencies, I think I should say, please make sure that you get your booster shot now. If you are at least 65 years of age, please make sure you get your booster shot now. And you can only do it through Pfizer. If you got the Pfizer vaccine, you can get the booster shot because it's Pfizer. If you are someone who has Moderna and got Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, you cannot go and get this booster shot from Pfizer. You have to wait until both Johnson & Johnson or both Johnson & Johnson and Moderna get their booster shots. And whichever, of course, of those that you got your original two shots from, then you have to get that consistently with your booster shot as well. So that's going to take a few weeks. And I think, I dare say, by the middle of October or the end of October, then people who are Moderna and also perhaps Johnson & Johnson can also get their booster shots as well. You've got to take it 6 months after, at least 6 months after you took your last shot. And you've got to be fully vaccinated. So it's the second shot. 6 months after your second shot is when you're eligible, when you can take the booster. I'm trying to say booster and vaccine at the same time. The booster shot. Oh, dear me. Never accuse me of speaking slowly. I know I take pauses between speaking, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm speaking slowly. Do you understand that? I know you do. I know you do. And you know who did that best is yet to come routine. You know who did that at the Republican convention. I'm not going to tell you, but you know. You know. You can just plug it into YouTube and you can see it. It's unbelievably scary. But speaking of scary, put it this way. That was not a good segue. I be well. I really hope that your day today was good and continues to be good until we get to the nighttime, and that continues to be good until we get to the next day, which will be Tuesday. And I hope that your Tuesday is going to be better than your today has been. And I hope that your today has been better than your yesterday. You get it. You get it. I really do care. And I hope that you're well. Be careful out there and be safe out there. Please get vaccinated fully. Please wear a mask. Please. And stay away from the large crowds and all of that. And don't travel to places that you're not familiar with. And don't make these big, long travel treks. That's where people get this virus. And I don't even want to call it breakthrough infections. It's this virus is everywhere infection. That's what it is. It's not a breakthrough anything. It's this freaking virus is everywhere infection. That's what it is. And if you start framing it like that, people will get scared quick, right quick. So do me a favor, won't you, dear listener, please? Won't you please? Please get fully vaccinated and please wear a mask. Thank you very much. Spread the word, not the virus. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.